This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Katie Henriksen.
Jacqueline Froelich.
Christina Thomas.
Antoinette Grajeda.
And Ithi Agnihotri Matholkar.
And this day and this week on Ozarks at Large, we're looking back at some of our favorite stories of the year. And Jacqueline, we're going to start with a story that you did in October when you went to Joplin.
I wanted to check on what folks were going to do about Halloween, but really, just the word Joplin elicits tremendous distress.
Because of the tornado, right?
I think for everyone, an EF5 tornado, and it twisted apart like 7,000 homes and businesses, killing 162 people. But when I got there, most of the landscape that had got crushed by the tornado, ravaged by the tornado, had been cleared. And they were just starting the rebuilding. And when I showed up, also the extreme makeover crew had just finished a build. So that was crazy. I arrived at dawn and got to meet all of them, and they love public radio. They said so off tape, but it was
why Halloween? What did you like about Halloween?
Because everyone, I think there's going to be a lot of visitation around the holiday season, and you know, the 6 months, the year anniversary, all the various anniversaries. I thought that would be a peculiar time to go, and you know, Halloween's all about home and trick or treating and candy.
Neighborhoods.
And
it's a neighborhood
yes,
thing.
Yes. Yeah. But I did get to talk with a woman who was with the Chamber of Commerce, and she described that Joplin is now a disaster tourist destination. So people are coming to look, but many, many are coming to help, which is really incredible.
So let's listen to that story from October of this year.
This evening, hundreds of little ghosts and goblins will roam the neighborhoods of Joplin in search of sweets, but none will venture to South Joplin, where 5 months ago a monster EF5 tornado packing 200-mile-per-hour winds, traveling 10 miles per hour, ground along the landscape for 13 miles. 162 lives have been lost so far, hundreds more injured, with 17,000 people affected. 4,000 homes were destroyed, an additional 3,500 damaged. Much of the 3 million cubic yards of debris have been hauled off over the long, hot, dry summer to landfills in Kansas and nearby Lamar. Left behind a panorama of desolate lots dotted with concrete foundations, punctuated by a few shredded trees, some showing a little autumn color. Where the tornado veered, small pockets of traumatized neighborhoods stand, slightly damaged, intact homes. Today, with carved pumpkins on the porch and witches hanging in the windows, decorated for Halloween, holding to tradition. A new house is going up near the corner of 20th and Connecticut, the city slowly issuing permits to build new homes because there's more demolition to be done. When the sirens started to scream late afternoon on May 22nd, Lynn Eilif Anstott, public information officer for the city of Joplin, hid in a downtown storm shelter with her daughter. They emerged unscathed, their lives upended.
We estimate it was about a third of our city. It basically, the tornado touched down on the western city limits and traveled virtually all the way through Joplin on the ground, moving at a very slow pace, and exited outside of Joplin, you know, on a city of Duquesne, which is east of Joplin. So it was on the ground for, you know, we've estimated about 20 minutes. We basically, it really was like a blender just churning up everything.
Whole neighborhoods gone. In the following hours, days, and months, federal, state, and local agencies, along with 90,000 volunteers, came to Joplin's aid. This afternoon, you can see for sale signs quaking in the wind on huge expanses of empty lots. Still, nearly 90% of displaced families have decided to stay. Crystal Payton's External Affairs Division lead for FEMA. She arrived in Joplin May 26th. Typically, individual assistance staff supporting housing operations are temporary, but Payton is assigned to Joplin through 2012.
Honestly, It was an overwhelming sight. I've worked, I've been with FEMA for more than 12 years, and I have worked a lot of operations, floods, tornadoes, hurricanes. But I think the most penetrating image to me is standing out there on 26th Street and looking around and realizing from horizon to horizon there was nothing but destruction. And it was so complete. The housing stock that was there was small lots close together, a lot of homes, so that when it was destroyed by this monster tornado, the debris was phenomenal, and there was so much of it. It was stunning.
The Joplin tornado is the deadliest single tornado since modern record-keeping began in 1950 and is ranked as the seventh deadliest in U.S. history. FEMA has been working with state, county, and city emergency response teams to coordinate rescue and recovery, and also is funding other federal agency mission assignments, 17 so far in Joplin, including an ambitious animal rescue operation.
Right now, that amount of money is around $158 million, and it has covered a variety of things, from the Environmental Protection Agency providing air quality monitoring. 93 classrooms, temporary facilities for the schools were built and delivered and installed so that the schools could open on time. Those were all funded through Corps of Engineers mission assignments.
Individuals and households in the two-county region have so far been provided $20 million for housing assistance, vehicle replacement, medical and dental bill coverage, because a high percentage of affected homeowners were renting working class.
About 43% of the homes that were damaged or destroyed were not insured. So with those families, FEMA would be providing some assistance if they have no other resources. In our area, for instance, more than 7,000 families have received assistance here within these two counties.
Displaced residents with few resources are living in temporary housing provided by FEMA.
We've got 569 households are currently housed in FEMA mobile homes.
The three mobile home parks are on the north edge of town. The city provided the land at no cost. The homes are fully furnished with running water and electricity. Public facilities and infrastructure planning is underway, including construction of a new high school to be renamed Hope High, a new hospital, of course, and permanent public housing. Many damaged and destroyed businesses have begun to rebuild as well. The Joplin tornado is the costliest on record, causing an estimated $2.8 billion in damage. But on the horizon, the future looks bright, says Joplin spokeswoman Lynn Onstott.
People are coming back to Joplin, looking at Joplin, and I think Joplin will be bigger and better than before. And if people have any doubts about where Joplin will be in, you know, a year, 2 years, 3 years, we invite them to come back. We have a great Convention and Visitors Bureau. They'd be happy to help them, you know, find us if they need to. We have an airport they can fly directly into. We welcome visitors. We welcome guests. We welcome people that are interested in moving here, because Joplin was a great community before the tornado. We're going to be a great community. We're going to be even better after the tornado.
You know, obviously we have challenges because some people think they hear tornado or natural disaster and they think your entire town's been wiped out. And that's not the case.
Martha Goetz with Joplin's Convention and Visitors Bureau welcomes everyone to visit downtown historic Joplin, as well as what townspeople refer to as the tornado scar on the landscape.
We don't have an organized, there's not an organized tour yet. And there is a specific kind of portion of tourism called disaster or grief tourism, and that's people who tend to come and visit things like the Holocaust camps, like 9/11 sites, Oklahoma City bombing, New Orleans. You know, so we're well aware that that will probably happen here. We have seen bus tour groups come through and tour the tornado zone. You know, it's expected. It's just, how do we get a handle on that to make sure it's a respectful and kind of dignified way to view the zone.
Martha Goetz, as have many here, lost family to the tornado, so are sensitive about this matter. But she says the ongoing surge of help, including from so-called voluntourists who travel to both sightsee and assist, continues to raise spirits here. And spirits will be seen tonight on Halloween, because large chunks of residential district were destroyed by the tornado. Trick-or-treaters will have special safe places to go, pocket festivals where they can collect candy and play, organized by local churches, including Carterville Christian.
Then we have the whole different section of people that really love to be scared. So, you know, we have a whole array of haunted houses and spook light tours and, you know, great creepy things that all the teenagers love to do.
But most of last week, the town's teenagers were hanging around the 2500 block of Connor Street watching ABC's Extreme Makeover Home Edition crew at work. Seven homes were built in just 7 days, a show record. At dawn last Wednesday, thousands of Joplin residents and fans were on hand for the big reveal. The bus roars off, revealing a surreal sight. A row of vernacular compact homes, each architecturally different, all completely landscaped, surrounded by blocks and blocks of nothing but dust. The first home now belongs to Kyle Howard and his family.
There was nothing here, and now now there's this beautiful home, and there's a block of beautiful homes, and we've had a chance to meet the families that are going to be in there, and they are incredible families. So all of this is just, it's perfect.
Howard, a Joplin firefighter, was a first responder to the May 22nd tornado. He labored to save lives and property without knowing how his own family had fared. Their home was destroyed, but everyone survived. Kevin Thielen, Joplin fire chief, grinned as he watched the happy chaos.
This is an awesome, awesome day for Kyle. He's an awesome firefighter. He's a good friend, and I'm really proud that he gets to experience this. There's not a more deserving person in the world than Kyle Howard. I'm so glad he gets it.
Even Ty Pennington, the show's host, who's helped build homes for needy families across America, is in awe of what he's seen and experienced in Joplin, Missouri.
This is the biggest thing we've ever done. It really is incredible. And to be able to be here for Joplin and help these guys really start their rebuilding process has been an incredible week. But to hear all the stories that come out of here, it's so inspirational. But yeah, this is a really big day, and I'm amazed that we could actually pull it off.
That's because 14,000 volunteers assisted the rambunctious Extreme Makeover crew, but an additional 83,000 had to be turned away, says Sam Clifton, owner of Millstone Custom Homes, who coordinated construction and materials donations.
It's been a wonderful build with all the volunteer help that we've had. The community has come together to do this. The amount of people that have helped us, the amount of people that were involved in the storm, that gave us their stories while we're building it, was just heart-touching.
Crystal Whiteley and her daughter, who lost two siblings in the tornado, also got a new home, along with five other families, all now sharing a tiny new neighborhood. And tonight, all seven brand-new porches will be lit up, ready for trick-or-treaters. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
Christina Thomas, one of the new voices. Well, actually, you did. We heard you in 2010 on the air, didn't we?
Very little.
Yes. You came as an Energy Corps volunteer.
I did.
Now you're with us all the time.
Yes.
One of the stories that we liked that you did was back in the spring.
Yes.
And it was Trail Mix.
Yes.
What is Trail Mix?
Trail Mix is an event. It's part of Walton Arts Center's Artisphere. And it is on the trails, the trail system in Fayetteville, the trail around Lake Fayetteville. And it is, there were bands scattered around the trail. And
you just kind of followed it.
Yes.
How do you do a story like that? You just take your remote equipment?
I did. I walked the trail like everybody else and stopped and listened to music and talked to the people that were enjoying it, recorded some of the music, talked to the people that were playing the music, talk to people that were powering the equipment, because part of the event is it's eco-friendly, it's earth-friendly, and so there were people that were riding bicycles to power some of the, you know, the amplifiers and equipment that are required for music.
All right, well, let's listen. This first aired this spring on Ozarks at Large. It's the Trail Mix during Artisphere.
Upon walking up to Lake Fayetteville's North Shore Park on this cloudy and cool day, one begins to hear the beat and rhythm of a band participating in this second annual event. Attendees are greeted by volunteers offering reusable water bottles sporting the festival's logo and a map marking the locations of the bands, which are spread out along the trail. Volunteer Jean Turiser says that she is participating because she loves the Walton Arts Center.
And I love being outdoors on an otherwise not so beautiful day. But it's just a lot of fun, and there's so many interesting things going on, and we get to hear this great plastic music.
Plastic Music is the first musical group approached as the journey along the trail begins. Plastic Music, both words spelled with a K rather than a C, uses all plastic instruments, such as buckets and tubes, and plays recognizable music from Beethoven to today's hip-hop hits.
I'm just got a few pieces of information about how the city of Fayetteville is working on various sustainability actions and some of their accomplishments over the last few years, and then have their plan that shows different things they're working on for the future as well.
That's Liz Hill, Energy Corps member with the City of Fayetteville's Sustainability Department. She had a table set up just beyond the first stage, passing out this information. Other groups, such as the Arkansas Energy Office and Ecological Communities, were represented as well. Activities for kids to participate in were also at this locale. Beth Ashbaugh, with Appleseeds, Inc., offered such a project.
So we're doing some planting with the kids, making paper pots out of newspaper, and teaching people that you don't have to buy the little plastic pots when they're planting.
Attendees continue along the trail, either walking, biking, skating, or scooting, until they approach the next musical act. That's the music of Nielsen Mata and his group, Brazilian Voyage. While originally from Brazil, the group now lives in New Jersey and made the trip to Fayetteville just for this festival. Mata says that he enjoys the green nature of the event.
Well, you know, it's the natural thing, and it's very important always. Green is very important. We have to go for it. We don't have a choice now. At this point, any help is great. So this is perfect. You know, people come and see us play. You know, the electricity here is provided by the earth, the sun. So it's very, very comfortable to say I'm honored to be here.
As Mata mentioned, his set and equipment are powered by solar panels. All of the acts are fueled by an alternative power source. The next band approached uses humans, pedaling stationary bicycles. Dan Dean, Energy Corps member for the Walton Arts Center, was in charge of this particular setup, including getting the biker bar to its current location.
I've been organizing the biker bar and bicycle aspects of Trail Mix. A group of us met at Walton Arts Center parking lot this afternoon and rode up here pulling the biker bar to Trail Mix.
It took Dan and a dozen others about an hour, utilizing the city's Skull and Mud Creek trail systems, to make the voyage. While pedaling, he explains how the biker bar arrangement works.
We have three bicycles on trainer stands. They're turning an axle that creates DC power that's then inverted into AC power to supply power for the base amp.
The band that Dan and two other volunteers are powering is Hogtown Hot Club, playing gypsy jazz meets American swing. It is here where Mary Lopes and Claire Small had parked their bicycles and laid out a blanket, enjoying the tunes. They were appreciating the dancers. wearing colored elaborate masks and costumes, dressed as flowers, frogs, and insects.
And these kids are...
And I love the dancing. That's new. They didn't have that last year.
It's fantastic.
With those costumes, they're lovely.
And everybody's got their own personality that they're bringing out through the dance.
Yeah.
These girls are adorable.
Aren't they?
It's interesting to try to guess if they're girls or their age, right?
The dancers, located at each of the five stages, are part of Annie Hickman's Weaving the Wild. Annie's work blends together basketry, costumes, sculpture, movement, and nature. Local dancers and theater groups volunteered their performances, with a finale bringing all of the creatures together. At the final performance, guests either continue on the trail, sans music, or turn around and enjoy the acts a second time. Other groups involved in the event are Razia Said and Papa Rap's Arkansalsa. Back at the beginning of the trail, or the end in some cases, audiences have walked or biked at least 4 miles. Volunteers say that they have passed out about 500 water bottles, but believe that attendance is more like 700. Trail Mix is a truly unique event, bringing together music and nature lovers, a true opportunity to enjoy artists that are inspired by nature, and in turn, are inspiring others. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Christina Thomas.
That story first aired this spring, and Christina, they're going to do Trail Mix again this year for Artisphere.
They will.
In two places.
Oh, I didn't know that.
They're
going to
do it in Fayetteville, and the next day they're doing it in Bentonville.
Oh, on the Bentonville trails.
Yeah.
Neat.
So that'll be exciting. Antoinette.
Mm-hmm.
Antoinette Grajeda. When did we go to Paris, Arkansas?
Was it March?
I think so.
I feel like March sometime.
And we went to visit someone who, if you ever need to fill a few minutes on Ozarks at Large, there's a list of people who will talk and will be interesting doing so.
Yes.
And Bob Cowie.
Is one of them.
Yes. Bob Cowie.
He is a deacon in Paris, Arkansas, who owns his own winery.
And is the curator of the Arkansas Wine Museum.
Yes. And he has, I don't know if he himself has built, but there is a chapel that was built there that he was finishing up while we were there. And the reason we went was because of all these bells that he is collecting, like giant church bells from all over the place.
Yes. And the thing about Bob Cowie is, there's a thing, and I think we all agree, you would rather have a source who talks more than less.
That is true.
Bob Cowie talks more than
he
less.
He does.
And I'm not mean that in a bad way.
No, I was thoroughly entertained.
Yes.
I don't know how, we were there for a while, and we got to see the wine museum, because I've never been. I don't know if you'd been down there before.
I have.
Well, I had not, so that was my first time there, and... There, he was showing us some of the bells inside, but then what I remember distinctly was going to the warehouse where the majority of the bells were being stored because they were going to be restored somehow or whatever. It was whatever kind of light that was on in there, it took a while to actually turn on. So when he turned it on, I was like, okay, there's like 5 or 6 in here. That's cool. Well, once the whole room got lit up, there were like hundreds of bells. They just kept going in this warehouse. And... it's incredibly impressive. I didn't even know what to do with it.
Well, here are bells in Paris, Arkansas. Robert Bob Cowie has a few loves that he can talk to you about. Certainly his family, raised in and around Paris, Arkansas. His faith, he's a Catholic deacon and parish administrator at St. Anthony's Church down the highway from his home. His country, too, and his work. He founded Cowie Wine Cellars near Paris and created the Arkansas Wine Museum. And he is also very fond of bells. Bob Cowie is a member of the American Bell Association. This summer, he's scheduled to deliver a talk to that association about big bells. He's using that knowledge to amass quite a collection of historic bells. And part of that collection will be part of a chapel he's building on his land in Logan County.
What we're going to do here is raise this tower up 10 feet. So where the top of that cross is where the bottom of the roof will be. When we put the 10-foot section in, that'll make the main tower 45 feet tall. And there'll be 4 towers, and I think it's 28 bells in the 4 towers.
The chapel, still in progress, is a 30 by 16 space with choir stalls, stained glass, and of course, bells.
This bell right here came from Spain, we believe. And it says, St. Francis of Gabriel, ora pro nobis, pray for us, 1727. That's a 28 inch. And this bell on this side came from Scotland. And it was 1780. And it says in Latin, I am the gift of the Duke of Argon. Doesn't have quite the tone the other one does.
Each part of this chapel has a history, a story that Bob Cowie knows. The portrait of Mother Teresa, the oak beams, everything. Bob and his wife plan to be interred in the chapel as well. But that's not scheduled for some time. Bob has projects to complete, including the chapel. It started modestly. It was to be a 10 by 8 or so chapel, just large enough for morning office, and maybe have a couple of moderately sized bells to ring. Then he found a 46-inch bell that he liked. He liked it a lot.
Well, that's going to look dumb, one big one and one little one, so we need something in the middle, you know? And then I thought, well, I have seven children. I'll get one for each of them. That'll give me seven bells. So then we had to make the tower bigger, okay? And then I thought, well, they made a lot of iron bells from 4 inches to 54. Why don't I try to get one of each one? So I enlarged the tower, added three more towers, and started collecting all the sizes. I still need one to have a complete set, but I don't think anyone can come close to my set right now from the bell collectors that I know in the United States. I know several.
And those friendships with other bell collectors helped Bob begin to find more bells. Fellow bell aficionados heard about historic bells that were being removed or placed up for sale, and they let Bob know about them.
I bought one from a Catholic Church in Pennsylvania that was 42-inch bronze. We'll see it after a while. And I bought it from some people from India who, I guess, were tearing the church down, and they were in New Jersey. And I called him and made him an offer on it, and he told me he could get more money on scrap than that. It's okay. I'm Scottish, by the way. And so 3 weeks later, he called me back and says, you still interested in the bell? It's over there now.
Over there is a warehouse across the highway from the chapel. Bob built it to store the bells and to work on the ones that will be included in the four towers. Others will be included in a bell museum Bob hopes to open someday. He's not quite sure how many he owns, but an impromptu inventory along one wall of the warehouse offers an example of the collection he's acquired.
20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30, 31, 32, 34, 35, 36, 37, 38, 39, 44, 41, 42, 43. There's 43 right here.
He does know this. He only needs a 50-inch bell to complete the run from 4-inch bell to 54-inch. He's sandblasted several that he already has and had them painted, naming each one after a saint or family member. He's had bells delivered on flatbed trucks, transported a couple home in the backseat of his car. They've come from demolished churches, from retired trains, and decommissioned ships.
That was a river bell on the Ohio River. This one over here, I'll clang it once. This is interesting. They would take this bell. That's the same company that had the big one on the dock. Okay. They would put this on the boat and go up and down the Ohio River. And on the shore, they built wooden barriers. You know, they had poles in it and boards across. They go down and ring this thing, and by the echo off of it, they could tell where they were in the river.
Bishop Taylor has blessed the bells, a ringing ceremony you can see and hear in a video on the Cowie Wine Cellars website. Bob hopes to have the chapel ready for a blessing within a year's time. It will be officially dedicated as the Cowie Family Chapel of St. Anne of the Bells, a nod to the former St. Anne's school that was on the land many years before Bob bought it to build his business and now the chapel. And as much as Bob knows about bells, he has one very big question he'd like answered.
Where is the largest bell in Arkansas? Who has it in its history? And it could be an iron bell or a bronze bell. Bronze bells are more pricey and a little bit higher class. Iron bells are just fine. And I'd like to know where they are. I think I know, but...
but you would like to, I mean...
Cause I want it verified.
If you know the answer or just want to know about the bells or the chapel under construction, you can go to CowieWineCellars.com. Cowie spelled C-O-W-I-E. CowieWineCellars.com. Thanks again to Bob Cowie for being our host in Paris, Arkansas.
You.
We'll probably try to find a reason to talk to Bob
again
in 2012. Ethi Agnew Hotri Madolkar.
Yes.
Let's see. This fall, a series about international students was on Ozarks at Large.
Yes. We had a series on the International Education Week. That is an annual event and a national event as well. And we'd been planning this for a while. If you remember, Kyle, we'd been talking, you know, how we should cover this international population of students that comes to the University of Arkansas each year and makes this alien place their own. And Barry, what was interesting was there was this blind student at the university who's been here for a while, and his experience, and he's from India, so his experience being an alien in this country, as well as being having a physical handicap
without sight.
Mm-hmm. That was something that I was really interested in. You know, how does he go about his day? And it was very, very interesting to just see what he does. And he was great. He's so talented. He's also flown a plane.
Hmm.
He has.
Okay.
So there
well,
you go.
Here's that story from this fall.
Hi, I'm Anmol Bhatia. I'm a graduate student in the Rehabilitation Counseling Program here at the University of Arkansas.
Anmol and I are sitting on a bench outside his classroom in the Graduate Education Building on the University of Arkansas campus. We have 10 minutes before his independent living class starts. He tells me he's lived in the United States since 1989, close to 22 years. He was born in Bombay, India.
When I was born, it was pretty much obvious that my eyes were smaller than normal. At this point, my family was not sure what was going on. The nurses were not sure what was going on.
Anmol was soon diagnosed with microophthalmia, a disorder in which one or both eyes are abnormally small. He had some vision in his right eye, but was completely blind in the left one. His condition worsened as he got older.
I think like my seventh grade year, I would discover that my vision was actually going down. You know, every year at the end of the year in school, like we always would buy this yearbook, you know, of pictures and everything that happened throughout the year. And that year I bought a yearbook, and normally every other year I could see the pictures clear through. That year I could not. Like, everything was a little bit blurry. When I go to the supermarket, everything was blurry. I discovered that something was happening to my eyes.
At first, Anmol's parents and extended family had trouble accepting his condition. They took him to every specialist they could possibly find in India and abroad. Finally, a specialist in Chennai, then called Madras, India, put all speculation to rest.
That doctor was pretty much straightforward and honest with us. You know, sat us down, he took a really good look at me. He said, you know, there's nothing we can do for your son. Anybody can do. It is what it is, you know. This is just the part of, you know, it is going to be like this for the rest of his life.
Our 10 minutes are over, and Mo's class has started.
Okay. My name is Julie Kaplan, and I am the program coordinator for Moneyball is the Person. Do y'all know what Moneyball is the Person is? Have y'all kind of been told?
I heard on CNN, people said Moneyball is the Person.
I meet him next morning at his apartment. He is getting ready to leave for his morning workout session at the gym at University of Arkansas's Health, Physical Education, and Recreation Building.
My parents realized pretty soon that one of the problems I'm going to have is getting an education. My parents, they lived in the United Arab Emirates in Abu Dhabi. in the United Arab Emirates and India, there's very limited education for blind people. The extent of education for blind people has gotten much better now. But just poor, you know, just small schools resulting in making brooms or, maybe just do some wood crafting. Most blind people ended up being beggars on the street there. And my parents didn't want that for myself.
Anmol's parents, who at the time lived and worked in Abu Dhabi, United Arab Emirates, enrolled him in a school for the handicapped in Abu Dhabi, and in the meanwhile, looked for educational opportunities abroad. They decided to apply to the Arkansas School of Blind in Little Rock after hearing about it from a family member.
Don't we need to head out?
Yeah, okay.
Sorry about that.
No, you're fine.
It's time for Anmol's workout session.
Is this bus the university's bus?
Yes, the Razorback Paratransit.
I think it might be here.
Yeah, it's coming probably right now. It's about 8 o'clock.
I meet Anmol later at the University of Arkansas Union for the rest of our conversation. He tells me about his first trip to the United States to join the Arkansas School of Blind in Little Rock as a full-time student. His mother accompanied him on this trip. He was only 10 at the time.
My mom stayed with me for 2 months till I could get used to the place. By the time she left, I had already had friends and I had a life and a schedule.
But it took him a while to adjust to a totally different culture and his new life.
I mean, of course, I had cultural shocks. One of the first ones that I had was that we eat at 5:30 here. When we went to the cafeteria at 5:30, you know, that's about the time in India, that we have milk with a snack. Or if you're grown up, you have tea. We don't eat that till 9 or 10. So at 5:30 I go, I'm thinking, oh, okay, it's probably milk time. Come to find out, it's dinner time. Initially, I was all vegetarian. I did not eat meat at the time. This was a concern to my house parent in the school. So my house parent talked to my mom about it, and she said, you know, make him eat. Whatever is there, he has to eat. He has to learn how to eat meat. This food was going around. He put this beef finger in my plate. He's like, here, eat this. I ate it and I was like, I took one bite. I was like, this is pretty good. That time I never heard of Braille. I never heard of cane. I never gave it thought on how, the way I'm going to learn how to read is through Braille. I learned that, so I was introduced to that within my first day. The first week I was introduced to a Braille teacher. That first week I was also introduced to cane. So that's how I'm going to be learning how to get around.
After graduating from the Arkansas School of Blind, Anmol completed his undergraduate degree at the Henderson State University in Arkadelphia and got his master's in political science from the Arkansas State University in Jonesboro. He also got a graduate certificate in conflict mediation from the University of Arkansas Little Rock before joining the Rehabilitation Counseling Graduate Program at the University of Arkansas Fayetteville. He says, even though he's always been an international student in the United States, he thinks he's more American than Indian.
Honestly, when I go back to India, I actually feel like I'm more of a foreigner in India than I'm here. I cannot really get used to their culture or their ways. And frankly, I think the way they view disability in India and the way they, I'm not really that comfortable because I don't think they quite accept people with disabilities there. As independent and fully capable individuals in society.
So is there still something about India that he still feels connected to?
I love Indian food. I miss Indian food. More than anything else I miss is the Indian. But India is Indian food.
Anmol loves politics, debate, surfing the internet, socializing, meeting new people, trying new things, and traveling.
In school, I used to be in track and wrestling, and we would travel to different schools for the blind. We would compete with other schools for the blind across the country. Internationally, I've traveled to 6 countries: India, the United Arab Emirates, of course, Bahrain, Kuwait, the United Kingdom, and the United States. So I haven't traveled that much extensively.
I ask him about what his experience of traveling is like, since for most people, it's about seeing new places.
That's a great question. And I may not get the same experience of scenery, watching the scenes, the beauty of that. One of the things that I think as a blind person I've learned is to imagine things. And just, visualize the picture in my head of what it might have been like. What is it that my friend is, what my friend is describing to me, what something looks like. I can visualize in my head, maybe this is how it must be looking like this.
Anmol tells me that he is a very adventurous person, so I ask him, what is the most adventurous thing he's done?
I think last year we did climb Mount Perigene Mountain, Perigene Mountain, I've done that, the most adventurous thing I've done is fly a plane. I've actually flown a plane. Not really, but I did have control. Of course, I've also driven a car. A friend of mine, in fact, one time he invited me to his home on a weekend and to his farm and took me to a cow pasture. He's like, okay, now, yeah, he got me behind the wheel and said, start driving. He's like, when I tell you to turn, turn. When I tell you to brake, brake.
He also plans to learn skiing very soon. As for Anmol's future plans, they are ambitious but simple.
My goal in life is to do good in some way or another. Whatever I do is to do good. I want to help people with disabilities. I want to be an advocate for students for people with disabilities. I want to help them, to live a life that is fulfilling as part of having the disabilities.
And where does he want to live?
I want to live my life in the United States. Been here for 23 years, and I said feel comfortable. Feel like I'm an American. And I just can't imagine living anywhere else.
For Ozarks at Large, I'm Iti Agnihotri Mudholkar.
That story was part of a series we did on international students at the University of Arkansas this fall. This is a show where we're looking back, this show and all of this week, at some of our favorite stories that we did this past year on Ozarks at Large.
Mm-hmm.
Iffy, I think it's fair to say you struggled for a long time how to put this story together.
I did. Because I did speak with Anmol before, when we started doing the story, and his apprehension was that no one should pity him because of his physical handicap. And that was my concern as well, that I should just be able to tell the story without bringing in this element of sympathy for him or pity for him, because he's a great person, mm-hmm. All by himself. There's nothing. He's just special.
Now, when you first did the story,
uh-huh.
I think it was like 18 minutes, right? Because
yes.
There was nothing you wanted to take out.
I did not.
And we got it down to about 11.
11.
Yeah.
That was quite an accomplishment.
That's sometimes the hardest thing. Agreed? Table wide?
Yes, definitely.
Deciding what not to keep is sometimes the hardest thing.
Yes.
We're going to hear a portion of something that you did early in the year, Antoinette.
Yes.
We won't actually hear your voice on this.
No. And you don't need to, because it's great. Kevin So is this musician who... I believe he's based in Nashville right now, and Jules Taylor from Arts Live Theater is the one who had told me about him, and he had a show, February or March, here at Scarpino's in Fayetteville, and it was on a Sunday, and so I got to talk to him over the phone before he came, kind of let people know about the show, but while he was in town, he had time to come by the studio and talk to me again and actually play a couple of songs for me, and it was so cool because it was on a Sunday, and so it was just Jules brought him by, and it was just me, and I had my own, private little concert, which is one of the things I love about the Furman Garner Performance Studio, is just the intimacy of it, as opposed to, I love live music, going out to concerts, and there's a lot of really good local music venues, but it's something really special about being able to have someone just right here and be like, tell me about your music, and then have them play it just for you.
So this is Kevin So,
mm-hmm.
in the Furman Garner Performance Studio early in 2011. Thank you.
everybody's got for sure. That's fine, make it through just like before. Was blind, not looking at the positive. I have some friends with Linda, give me help with any fear I'm facing. They say, don't ever throw the towel in. No way, if music is your medicine. Okay, I need to hear it now and then, reminding me about the dream I'm chasing. The sun is shining, and I'm on my way. The sun is shining, and I'm on my way. Back is up against the ropes. Hold tight, you ain't about to give up hope. Alright, you're not the flavor of the month. You don't have what some people want. You're not a juggler in the circus. Chin up, keep your eyes upon the prize. Life's rough, it'll try to cut you down to size. Takes guts, this dream you have, can't let it die. To me, a clear blue sky is never perfect. The sun is shining, on my way. The sun is shining, and I'm on my way. I'm looking forward, I'm looking forward to a brighter day, brighter day. Dark clouds may roll on over, but my shoulder, and they're taking me to higher ground, taking me to higher ground, taking me to higher ground. I found the road to my recovery, touched down and back in touch with what is me. New round, been through this bumpy uphill climb. I've had to jump in double time, turn on a dime, and never lose it. This game of life that we all plan to win, there's no shame in feeding off adrenaline. Refrain from what could be the end of us. Besides, the finest drug is made of music. The sun is shining, and I'm on my way. Sun is shining, and I'm on my way. I'm looking forward, I'm looking forward to a brighter day, brighter day. I'm looking forward, I'm looking forward to a brighter.
That's Kevin So, recorded inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio earlier this year. He does tour with Keb Mo?
Yeah, he's been on tour with Keb Mo. I've been following him on Facebook and stuff, and I think they've wrapped it up. So I'm kind of hoping he gets to come when Keb Mo comes in January.
Yeah.
I don't know yet. I haven't seen, but that would be great, and I'd love to see if he'd want to come back.
All right. Thank you, Antoinette. Mm-hmm. Katie Hendrickson, we heard you at the beginning. We haven't heard from you yet, but we will. You picked out a story for tomorrow, right?
I did.
Okay. We'll talk to you then.
Okay.
I asked those of you who were with me when we did this last year when we reviewed our favorite things, if you're the type of person that makes a resolution, and if so, do you have a resolution for 2011 or 2012, which is just around the corner? Iffy, do you make resolutions?
Don't look at me, please, first.
Jackie, are you the type of person that makes resolutions?
No, because I'm type A, and I do everything all the time, and I need no more discipline.
Christina?
Well, yes and no. I'm continuing with some healthy changes that I've already made this year, and to do more yoga.
Okay.
Hi.
Well, there you go.
That's healthy. Yeah.
Katie?
That's good.
I tend not to, just because the New Year is an artificial boundary. So I think all throughout every day I'm trying to think of new things that I should do to change up my life.
And that could be very healthy or not very healthy.
Or, yeah.
You know? Yes.
Yeah.
Antoinette?
I mean, I think it's a good time to think about something you want to work on, maybe on yourself, or maybe like with work you can set goals and stuff. Because I know last year I set a goal of getting on a fire truck, and Ithy and I did.
We did.
Woohoo! We were very excited about that. So I need to find some new goals for stories this year.
Okay.
I'll think about that.
All right. Ithy, I'm coming back to you.
Well, okay, here's the thing. I forgot what I was going to say.
Okay. It's fair enough.
Can I come back tomorrow?
I like it.
Yeah, sure. We've got a whole week. Tomorrow, more of our favorite stories from 2011 on this special week of Ozarks at Large. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you. Sequoia Retreat and Conference Center features Music on the Mountain the first Tuesday of every month. January welcomes folk and string musician Kelly Mulholland on Tuesday the 3rd at 7 p.m. Walk-up tickets are available with proceeds to benefit the Restore Clap Auditorium Fund. 443-4531 for more information.
From our live coverage of the opening of Crystal Bridges Museum to stories about groundbreaking research at the University of Arkansas, KUAF has kept you informed on the most important events of 2011. The news will not let up in 2012 with the presidential campaign and the uncertain world economy. You can help us bring that news to you. You can make a year-end tax-deductible gift at KUAF.com. That's KUAF.com. You can click on Contribute Now. Thanks. More of our favorite stories tomorrow, including a return trip to the Coleman Theater in Miami, Oklahoma, a story about undocumented youth and how they survive in Northwest Arkansas, and a conversation with illustrator Dusty Higgins, and more of our favorite stories tomorrow.
A listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas, this is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Springdale.
Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. Have a happy Boxing Day.